Red Sox fans, here are the bastards of Boston baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first ever episode of The Bastards Investigate. This is an MLB-wide episode, so there won't be a ton of Red Sox talk on these episodes. We're going to be covering kind of hot-button issues across the league. It's going to be just once a week. It's going to be typically recorded on Friday nights and then released on Saturday mornings, so you can basically count on that being the schedule. As far as the regular show goes, there's no changes. We're going to keep the regular schedule, the early week show with Jason and Charlie, and the midweek show still with Andrew and Job. Co-hosting with me on this format is Doug James. You can find Doug also on the YouTube channel with the Bastards of Boston. He and Charlie tag team the Red Sox Top 5 Deep Dives. You can find all kinds of content from us on YouTube as well. Doug, how are you?
I'm doing good, Terry. How are you?
Doing good. So, did a kind of a fun bonus segment last week called Totally Legit or Call the Cops. So that was kind of a nice little test flight. So we'll come into a more permanent format here. So the two topics we will be getting into, it's actually three topics, actually. We're going to talk about the awkward, as Ken Rosenthal put it, departure of Albert Pujols from the Anaheim Angels. They designated him for assignment. Then we'll get into the Mets organization with the firings of their hitting coach and assistant hitting coach, Chili Davis and Tom Slater. And then apparently Francisco Lindor, Jeff McNeil had a little bit of a brouhaha. So we'll get into that as well. Ready to do this?
Yeah, I'm ready. Are you?
I'm always ready. I love baseball. Always ready to talk baseball. So I guess it's been, what, 48 hours, 72 hours, something like that, Albert Pujols designated for assignment. Kind of came out of nowhere. What was your, like, initial reaction?
My initial reaction was I was surprised. I was surprised that it was a release and not a retirement. So that makes me think, is Albert still want to play? Which would probably mean he does want to play still, which, you know, I'm surprised by that. I know he wasn't having the greatest of years, you know, 5 home runs, 12 RBIs. On base was 250, slugging was 372, OPS 622. You know, league-wide average right now is about 233, so I mean, he's below that, but he's not that far below the league average in terms of batting average. So we'll see if he, you know, goes to another team. I feel like he will, but I'm just not really sure where. So that'll be an interesting, you know, to see what happens over the next few weeks if he does catch on with someone else. But yeah, I was surprised. I was a little surprised. I really thought he was going to retire personally, but yeah, I guess we'll see what happens now.
Yeah. I mean, you look at other Hall of Fame caliber baseball players over the past decade that have retired. Derek Jeter got a year-long tour, and it kind of became a fun thing. Like, what's this team's parting gift going to be? Because some of them were kind of cool. He got, like, the home plate from one stadium. Fenway gave him, I think, the number 2 from the left field scoreboard on the Green Monster and a bunch of other things. And that was like a year-long retirement tour. David Ortiz, similar situation, yeah. Got his big send-off. And with Pujols, it's just kind of a, oh, by the way, you know, Albert Pujols has been designated for assignment. So it's just kind of interesting. And the Angels coming into that day had lost 10 out of their last 14 after having a nice start. But I mean, that's like the most Angels thing ever to start off good.
Yeah, that's the Angels.
Yeah, go right into the toilet. And
yep.
I guess if you're going to be slumping and you got like a really intense, hardcore guy like Joe Maddon managing the team, and you got this aging first baseman that had the least defensive runs saved, I think, in the last year or two.
Yeah.
It's just, it doesn't help to have him there. And you've got that Jared Walsh kid that we were talking about hitting .318 with a .393 on base percentage, has hit six dingers. Now that frees him up. I mean, obviously, they're better off with him in the lineup over a guy like Albert. So
100%.
It's just kind of weird. And I got thinking to myself, this was the last year of Pujols' contract. I mean, what was he thinking? Because you're right, he did want to play, and that's ultimately why he was released. He didn't want a bench role, and there was really no use for that. I mean, he's not going to pinch run late in a game, is he?
No, he's not going to have any defensive replacements at first base either.
Absolutely. So there's just there was no value for him to be on the bench. But what was he thinking coming into his last year of his deal? Was he going to get a 1 or 2 year deal beyond this?
Yeah, I don't know what he was thinking. That was never going to happen, especially because how Walsh is playing. And, you know, I think a lot of people around the league thought Walsh was going to be a really good player. So that shouldn't be a surprise to Albert. Plus, with Ohtani DHing, there's no way you can get Albert in the lineup. And even if you got him in the lineup, we saw it. He doesn't produce. So the Angels really had to do what they had to do. And it was just surprising to me how it came off, because I really thought they would talk to Albert, say, you know, Albert, let's retire. Let's, you know, have a little ceremony for you and just call it a career. And I'm actually more surprised that Albert didn't want to do that. I'm surprised he still wants to play. Must be just for the milestones at this point, because he's not going to win anything. If he's going to go to a team that's going to, I don't know, maybe try to sell tickets, even though COVID and I don't know, you know, with full capacity not being there yet, I don't know what purpose that serves for selling tickets at this point. But yeah, I don't know what Albert is thinking, to be honest with you.
Yeah, like they should have. I don't know why the front office just didn't tell him coming into the final year, like, hey, Albert, I mean, this is going to be it. This year is it. And I just don't know why Albert didn't reach out to them and be like, hey, what are your plans for me? Like, there should have been communication there. And they could have had the send-off. Alex Rodriguez was given like 5 or 6 days by the Yankees when they made the decision. Okay, we're going to part ways with you. But you can play out this week and have your send off. That didn't happen here. And the more I did think about it too, I mean, let's face it. The Angels, are they the biggest dumpster fire organization in MLB?
They might be. I don't know if there's a worse owner right now than Moreno.
Yeah,
I don't think there is one, to be completely honest with you.
No, absolutely not. Have you ever heard how the negotiations for Pujols went?
A little bit, but I never really, you know, took a deep dive into it.
It was just
I heard a little bit.
It was a conversation in winter meetings. Moreno approached his agent and said, I don't have his agent in front of me. I know it wasn't Scott Boras, but he approached Pujols' agent and said, would Albert accept a $160 million contract? I don't know what the years were on it. And Pujols' agent said, that's a generous offer, but I'm going to have to speak with Albert. You know, I can't make that call. So Moreno fires back immediately. Same conversation, fires back immediately and says, well, what about $200 million? Do you think Albert would be happy with that? And Pujols' agent goes, well, I still kind of, you know, have to talk to my client. And then, I kid you not, this is according to Tom Verducci. Moreno fires one last bullet and he says, all right, well, what about $240 million? over 10 years. And apparently the deal happened. That was, they added on the 10 year personal services agreement to the end of it. So
right.
What that is even though he did get DFA'd starting next year when the player contract would have ended, the personal services contract still is set to begin, and he'll get $1 million a year for 10 years. And he'll be like a consultant if all that still pans out, if plans don't change. So it's a little weird, but going back to the Moreno thing, that's how bad he is. It was a 5-minute conversation, and he increased the contract by $40 million, each time. And for a 32-year-old player, obviously, it's probably one of the worst contracts of all time. And it was an ownership deal that wasn't GM driven. It was Artie Moreno wanting Albert Pujols, and the deal went down just like that. And you can probably say that was basically the start of the downfall, couldn't you?
Yeah, you could. Since he got to the Angels in 2012, he hasn't 300 with them yet, which obviously he's not going to do because he's not there anymore. He never had more than 37 doubles, which in St. Louis, he's obviously a doubles and home runs machine. He had 40 home runs from 03 to 06 with the Angels or with the Cardinals, and he only hit 40 home runs one time in Los Angeles. So even since he got there, it's just been steady decline. And, you know, 32 years old, I believe, when he signed that deal, like you said, he was 30, 32. Those are just contract killers. 10 years for that? It was absurd at the time. It's even worse now. And like you said, leave it to the Angels.
Yeah, and the Angels made the playoffs in 2014, were swept by the Kansas City Royals. They last made the playoffs before that in 2009, if I'm not mistaken. And they actually beat the Red Sox in the ALDS that year. But even from an organizational standpoint, their downfall started when they signed Pujols. And then, of course, the Josh Hamilton contract, which ended up being a mess.
I actually forgot about the Hamilton deal. That was terrible.
Yeah. And then they just gave him away to the Rangers, and even they couldn't get his career going. And then the CJ Wilson deal, I think, was 7 years. That blew up. Just a series of bad move after bad move. And when you talk about how they're a dumpster fire, they didn't win a single playoff game with Albert Pujols and Mike Trout in their lineup. They have still not won one single playoff game, never mind a series, one single playoff game in the month of October, and have just underperformed miserably. And this is the third GM that they're on since the signing of Pujols. They had Jerry DePoto, Billy Epler, and then Perry Minasian, I think he pronounces it. So,
yeah.
So none of the GMs were attached to Pujols. They all essentially inherited him. So that could be why maybe there wasn't much communication. And it was just absolutely, it's just unfortunate because he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Absolutely. He's one of the best right-handed hitters we've ever seen in our lifetime. And he's one of the best right-handed hitters in the history of this game. And it's almost sad what's happened to him, because you just remember those days in St. Louis where he was probably the best player in baseball, just raked. And you get to Los Angeles, and it's almost, you never heard of him after that. After 2000, you haven't really heard much of Pujols, if anything. You know, you're not tuning in to watch the Angels, you know? So,
absolutely.
And even now, it's like crazy that with Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani, and Rendon, they're not going to make the playoffs. Like, those three players on one, they're not going to make the playoffs. It's, to me, that's insane. Like, it's ridiculous, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, they need a front office that operates like a front office, and Artie Moreno just needs to sit off to the side and let actual baseball executives run that organization. and not only at the big league level, but in the farm as well. They need to start from the ground up, and Moreno is like, I think, approaching 80 years old. So how long does a rebuild
take? He's up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. He's up there, and he's not going to be – I don't think he's going to be around for that rebuild, which they need to do. So.
Yeah, I mean, you figure it's going to take 4, 5, 6 years to do. If you look at the Marlins, the Orioles, and by then Moreno's, what, 83, something like that? I mean, with the Tigers, they had Mike Ilitch, and Dave Dombrowski was the GM, and they tried so hard to get him a ring, and he passed away probably 3 or 4 years ago, right around the age of 90. But yeah, so time's definitely running out for Moreno, and he's like the Jerry Jones of MLB. Just needs to stay out of it. And the big winners in that whole situation were the St. Louis Cardinals, because they offered him 10 years, $210 million. So it ended up being roughly in the end, if you count the personal services deal, $42 million short. But they didn't have to watch the painful decline of Pujols. And I just wonder, with his legacy, I mean, why would he want to serve out those 10 years in Anaheim? I mean, they literally accomplished nothing with him. His legacy, I just slapped my microphone. His legacy is in St. Louis, and he's loved there.
Yes.
When he went there for the first time, I think that was in 2019, got a standing ovation in every at-bat. I think he homered in that game. He had that emotional moment where him and Yadier Molina embraced at home plate. I think that was during his first at-bat.
Yeah.
And so why would you just want to waste another 10 years of your life with an organization that you never did anything for? They never really did anything with you. You don't have any ties to anyone. I mean, the front office has flipped already 3 times just in the players part of his deal. It was a terrible.
The crazy part to me. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
The crazy part to me, though, is when you just said the Cardinals offered $210 million. For the same amount of years, you're so I know $30 million is $30 million, but I don't know the tax situation in the state of Missouri, but in California, you're getting, you know, that's a lot of tax too.
So
how much money was he really losing?
That's an excellent point.
And you want to risk all that, which he did risk, and and you fall off in Los Angeles. You could have been a folk hero still in St. Louis, which he still is to this day, but. You imagine that legacy, you know, we'd be talking about him a little bit differently if he didn't sign with the Angels, I think. I mean, and it's sad because of how great he really is. And if I was him, I would have stayed in St. Louis. And I thought, even at the time when he signed that deal with Los Angeles, I said, why would you leave? You know, this is one of the top 3 to 5 fan bases in the entire sport, where you're idolized there. They're going to go to Los Angeles. You're going to get lost in the shuffle with all the other stars in that, you know, in that city with other sports, you know, other sports teams. I never understood the signing from the Angels' perspective. I didn't understand the signing from Pujols. And you know, 10 years later, and it didn't work out, at least in my opinion. I didn't think it worked out for either side. So
it absolutely didn't. And you look across the league right now, this guy in Detroit, similar contract, Miguel Cabrera, he's got to be next. You got to figure the wheels – In the Detroit front office have to be spinning. Is he really contributing? Yeah. And are they really better? They're paying him anyway. They're going to pay him anyway. Yeah. So should they pay him to go away or just let the suffering continue? Because he's having a much worse year than Pujols is having.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's hitting just .127. With a .225 OBP and a .238 slugging percentage. Absolutely putrid year for Cabrera. And let's see, he has 2020.
He's a couple more years left on his deal, too.
Yeah, 2022 and 2023. So he's got further to go, but I don't know why they just don't cut the cord and free up a spot there as well. I'd be shocked if he serves out the rest of the season.
Well, it's the same thing with Chris Davis from Baltimore. It's how does he still have a job? You know, it's like I thought about it the other day. It's like, who would have thought that Albert Pujols would get released before Chris Davis? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. The Cabrera deal is another one of those, you know, those long-term deals that just doesn't work out. And there's been so many examples of why you don't give players 10, 12-year deals. And these two, you know, Pujols and Cabrera are just more reasons why you don't do it.
Yeah, I'm pulling up. I've got an interesting comparison here. Cabrera is a couple years younger than Pujols even. He's 39 and has had a bigger decline. And yes. We talked the other day, we won't really get into it, but there's rumors that Pujols might even be older than what he is. For the listening audience, just Google that. It's a pretty wild story. There was an executive quoted from Miami when they tried to bring Pujols in 2012. So Cabrera is a lot younger. Well, a couple of years younger at least. But what I really wanted to bring up here for contrast, Cabrera and Pujols have both made in the neighborhood of $340 million, okay? But you got a guy named Nelson Cruz, who I think every team would love to have. You know,
oh, absolutely.
We Red Sox fans, I mean, unless you're going to put Martinez in the outfield, I mean, there's just no way to do it for us. But
you can't make that. You can't make that happen.
Most teams aren't really handcuffed like we are in that scenario. So any American League team can accommodate a guy like Cruz and would probably be happy to have him. So the other two guys have made $340 million in that neighborhood. Nelson Cruz, who is Pujols' age, he'll be 41 in July, has only made $124 million. So just over a third of what those guys made. Yeah, I know. But I'm just wondering, is there something to that? Like, he has to grind it out. Like, if he wants to get paid, let's see, he's getting $13 million this year. He got $12 million in 2020. That was obviously prorated.
Right.
And then he got $14 million 2019, $14 million in 2018. So he's kind of grinding along like that, but he needs to stay productive if he's going to get that money. The other guys got their money a long time ago, and they were guaranteed that money. So
exactly.
I just think where he's got to grind it out from year to year almost, that's what keeps him going at 41 and one of the better power hitters in the league. And another guy who made similar money, maybe just a little bit more than that, David Ortiz had even the best year of his career in 2016. So I just think
maybe the greatest contract in baseball history, David Ortiz.
Yeah. Well, he was only ever like 2, 3, 4 years at a time, and they would extend him out before the season would end. So he was never really a free agent. He was always extended during the season. But that probably kept him going. So I think it just adds to being like a cautionary tale for teams to not give a 30 something year old a 10 year deal. The Cano one, another one. How'd that work out?
Yes.
He failed not for well. steroids. Yeah. I think he was 30. So it, or maybe 31. So it didn't take him quite as far as Pujols or Cabrera, but yeah. Go ahead.
I thought the Yankees were smart about that, but then they turned around and give Jacoby Ellsbury that deal. So it's, you know, that they gave him. So, yeah, I don't know.
He had a ton of red flags. His would have went through his age 37 season, so not quite as far, but was far more injury prone than those two were. I mean, Cabrera and Pujols don't spend it. Well, Cabrera, I guess, in last couple of years gone on the DL, but he hadn't prior to that. And Pujols, I don't think ever really does. So Yeah. Before we move on, some potential landing spots for him. I mean, do you think his career is over?
I personally think his career is over. I came up with teams. I don't think he's going to go to any of these teams. We could also talk about him maybe going back to St. Louis just to have a little, you know, farewell type thing, but obviously he's not going to play. So I don't think he's going to do that. My three teams that I came in, like I said, I don't think it's going to happen, was Texas, because David Dahl, you know, you could put two in him with Dahl. Baltimore, I mean, like I said, COVID, sell tickets. It's not really happening right now, so maybe it wouldn't be this year they would do it. And the team I said that might make the most sense realistically is the Cleveland Indians. They can't hit. So if you have him and Reyes maybe platoon a little bit, you know, give some pool some at bats and maybe have a little bit of a spark, which he probably won't. That was the only other team, the three teams I thought of, and I thought Cleveland was the most likely, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say. I think Tampa could potentially be a landing spot. Toronto would be interesting. I mean, you got a bunch of kids that are up and coming, and maybe if you're bringing in Pujols, you're also the biggest attraction to bringing him in is his leadership, you know, because I mean he might be a god to some of these guys, you know. These guys were kids when he was in his prime. So that's one of the big things. I mean, he's going to come in on a major league minimum salary. That's what the new team would have to pay him, because he's still getting his, you know, his Angels contract. So it's going to cost a team literally nothing to bring him in. But I just feel like it's tough to really identify a perfect fit. And it won't be St. Louis, because he'd have to play first base, and Paul Goldschmidt's a gold glove first base, so that's not happening. And
no, yeah, but I just thought it would be a feel-good type thing if that's what he wanted. Maybe he could just, you know, ride it out for the rest of the year, but I don't see that either.
Yeah, and then Tony La Russa has already come out and said he's not coming to Chicago. And, of course, I mean, Yermín Mercedes is their everyday DH. He's a backup catcher who caught fire in the DH position. So
very, very pleasant surprise and great for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was
with Abreu there, he's not playing first. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing that would have made it attractive for La Russa is he would have a strong ally at that point, because – the whole city of Chicago is after La Russa right now. And I was rooting for that to work out, but it's just not. And so that would have been maybe a motivator for La Russa if they didn't have Mercedes in that spot. And I think a guy like Pujols could probably make an impact on a Tim Anderson type guy who can be, you know, he can be a little emotional and rambunctious at times. And so,
yes,
but that's not going to happen either. So, and you would think also the Angels, if they thought another team was going to be really interested, they might have tried to trade him even for a super low level prospect, but none of that happened. You know, he was still DFA'd. So there can't be a ton of interest there for Pujols. So maybe he'll land somewhere, but we'll just have to see in the coming days and weeks.
Yeah, I don't see it. And I struggled for a few minutes just to even think of those three teams. And I don't, like I said, I don't even think those three are realistic options. Those are just the best three that I could even come up with. And maybe in a non-COVID year, there might be a team like Tampa or Baltimore to attract more fans to come in and see Pujols for the last year of his career. But with COVID going on and, you know, full capacity not happening as of yet for most cities, I don't see it.
Yeah. So we'll keep an eye on it. And if something develops, we'll discuss it on a future episode. Another kind of interesting chain of events, I guess, that took place was the New York Mets, who probably fall within the dumpster fire category. Fired
new owner, same results.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a second. But they did fire Chili Davis, their hitting coach, and then the assistant hitting coach, Tom Slater. Red Sox fans would know Davis from his time as a hitting coach from 2015 through 2017. Two of those years were first place in the AL East. So an accomplished hitting coach at that. But before we do get into it, like, the Mets, to me, I mean, they have been a dumpster fire, but with new ownership, I kind of give them a pass. I did the same thing for the Marlins once Jeter took over and things are treading in the right direction. With the Mets, they kind of got off to a wonky start because the ownership the sale of the team didn't really get finalized until late last year. They brought in, yes, I already forgot his name, the other GM that was there just long enough to trade for Lindor, and then creepy pictures
Mr.
of him.
Mr. Porter.
Jared Porter, yes. Jared Porter. That's who it was. Good memory. he ends up sending, in the past, actually, it all went down before Porter arrived in New York, but creepy pictures of him surfaced with a foreign reporter who was uncomfortable with the text messages that she received from Jared Porter. So he was fired after like 3 or 4 weeks. And so you got the sale that keeps slapping my microphone. I never do that. You got the sale of the team. You got the GM getting fired. It's just a mess, and I don't think they really had enough time to assess the coaches and all that. They ended up keeping Luis Rojas as well. So initially when I heard of the firing, I thought, oh, well, that's such a Mets thing. But when you look at the moving parts, it's like, okay, yeah, they didn't really have enough time to address that. But what were your thoughts when, you know, as it went down?
I really wasn't too surprised. You know, when you're not hitting, usually the person that takes the fall is the hitting coach. I thought it was a little soon, 23 games in. And my whole thing when I first thought of it was, well, I wonder if Lindor was hitting, would he, you know, still be their hitting coach? I think that had a lot to do with it. You know, you just spent $340 million on Francisco Lindor, and he was, you know, was abysmal for the first, you know, 20 games. So obviously I just think Chili Davis was a scapegoat. I think it was early. I think it was too soon. It's not a big enough sample size to fire him after 20 games or whatever it was. So, and I actually looked at some numbers, because when he was with us, I actually was kind of surprised at how good our offenses were under him. In 17, I remember we just didn't hit a lot of home runs, but we were good at everything else that year. So I feel like it's just a Mets thing. And I don't want to, like, always kick the Mets while they're down, but they're just such an easy target. They do things like this that, you know, it's all, oh, there's the Mets again. And, you know, I don't know. I thought it was too soon, and I'm sure Chili Davis will get another, you know, hitting coach job. He's not a bad hitting coach. And so with the talent on the Mets, I understand they're going to say, oh, we're not hitting, we got to fire Chili. I don't know. I thought he was the scapegoat for that, and I didn't think he should get fired right away. What do you think?
Well, according to some articles that have been out there, the New York Post had a really informative article with some quotes from executives and stuff. Apparently, the downfall was the team was trending just a little under 500, not out of it, and that division's wide open. So the last place team is only 3 or 4 games out of it. But they weren't quite firing on all cylinders offensively, and it was ironically the Red Sox series where the decisions got made. Even though the two of them didn't get fired until 4 or 5 days later on Monday in St. Louis.
It was May 4th, yeah.
Yeah. And the Red Sox series was Tuesday and Wednesday of the week before, and the Mets only scored one run in 18 innings. It was a 2-game set.
Yeah.
And the first game, that was the Nick Pivetta game, 2-1 Red Sox. And then the next night, of course, with DeGrom on the mound, they don't score a single run.
DeGrom.
And the Red Sox Red Sox win that one 1-0. And the decision got made that night by Sandy Alderson and Zach Scott, who became their GM after Porter got fired. So they had to wait 4 or 5 days because they hired from within. So they hired, Hugh Quattlebaum, who was their minor league director, and then Kevin Howard, I'm guessing, is going to be their assistant hitting coach, and he was the head of player development. So they were within the organization anyway, and they had to get those spots filled, and then Quattlebaum and Howard needed to get their families moved, get all that in place. So Davis continued to be the hitting coach for a few days. But what also kind of got the ball rolling before that Mets series was Alderson and Zach Scott kind of sat in on a meeting that Davis was conducting with the players. And they were talking about hitting and all that. And Alderson and Scott weren't really thrilled with the fact that Davis wasn't really getting into the mechanics of the players. He wasn't addressing that. And he wasn't very analytical at all. And they just thought that they needed somebody with a fresher mindset and a new approach. And that was the basis for their decision, whether we agree with it or not. So
the analytics part, you're 100% right about. So if you think about Cohen, billionaire, what is he billionaire for? Analyzing the stock market. So that's going to be that's going to be the Mets. So the analytics thing, once again, that's the reason why. I hate analytics so much. I just do. But I get it from an analytical standpoint. I understand what you're saying. But for me, I just thought it was too early. That team has too much talent not to hit all season. 23 games, they're going to hit. Lindor was going to hit whether Davis was there or not. So he got off to a rough start. It's a new city. He goes from Cleveland to New York City. You know, that's an adjustment. And new league, too. And like I said earlier, the league average of hitting this year, it's like in the 230s. Nobody's hitting. So I just thought 23 games, you're going to fire him for that. I don't know. It's just a Mets move to me. And, you know, just a typical Met. We're going to, you know, our hitting coach is going to be the scapegoat. And if you're going to fire Chili Davis, Rojas is a horrible manager. So they wait till the end of the year to, you know, get rid of him. But I don't know. You could have made an argument you could fire the whole coaching staff there if you really wanted to. I just don't think Chili Davis was the only reason why the Mets weren't hitting, you know. It's just an easy thing to do, fire the hitting coach. But, you know, you're not going to trade the players, so you're going to fire the hitting coach.
Yeah, and, you know, I was going to get to that in a little bit, the status of Luis Rojas. We don't know Cohen yet. We don't really know the extent of his personality, how long of a leash people are going to have. Is he going to be the second coming of George Steinbrenner, where people are getting fired left and right? We have no idea. But
it has that feel.
It could, absolutely. And he was quoted as saying, well, the division is within reach and I'm not gonna disagree with a move that my executives wanna make, you know, if the trends basically justify it. I'm paraphrasing there, but if you're Luis Rojas, you're feeling some pressure right now. Aren't you?
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. And
absolutely.
He's not Cohen's guy. He's not Alderson's guy. He's not Zach Scott's guy. He's Brody Van Wagenen's guy.
Yes. That's what I felt like too. They're trying to get rid of all the Brodies, all the Brody people. And, you know, it started with Chili and Rojas will be next. If not in the next couple months, he's gone at the end of the season. 100%.
They would have to go on a hell of a run. I mean, I could see if they do go on a hell of a run and win the division by 5 or 6 games, I could see that being a scenario to where he could come back. But as of right now, it's not looking good.
No, it's not looking good for him. No.
Yeah. And so here's a question for you. And we didn't talk about this before the show, so you're kind of on the spot a little bit. But does anyone come to mind as far as a replacement?
For the Mets? I was thinking maybe Washington.
Ron Washington?
It's been a while since he's – yeah, it's been a while since he's managed, but he did a really good job in Texas. I don't think the Mets would hire him, but that was the first one that came to mind the other day when I was thinking about that, actually, was Ron Washington. And I don't know if that'd be a fit, but that if I was the Mets, you know, that's who I'd be calling. And I, like I said, I know we had that little scandal in Texas and whatever, but I think he'd be a perfect choice, to be completely honest with you. I don't know how you feel about that. So I'd like to hear your thoughts.
I don't know if he's a great fit, but like you, I'm a big fan. Like he's got,
I love him.
He's got kind of a, like almost a Francona type effect on players. They just play for him.
Yes.
And
exactly.
He got to the World Series 2 years in a row. I rooted for him both times.
As did I.
Yeah. And I didn't, even though we've played the Cardinals twice, I don't hate them as an organization. So it didn't hurt my feelings too bad, but he was one strike away a couple of times in that second one in 2011. And they just
exactly, yes.
Nelson Cruz botched the, the catch out there in right field. But I'm not sure if New York is a good thing. Cause he's got a lot of off the field baggage, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
The drugs. And
that was the thing with the baggage. The baggage was, you know, if you're the Mets, that's a splashy, you know, people know Ron Washington. And like you said, players love him. And
yeah.
I think that would make some sense. Again, I don't know if New York would be the, not a great fit. I don't mean fit, but I don't know if him being in New York would be a great thing, but for him, I mean, because, you know, I don't want him to get in any more trouble than he's been in, but that would be a good team for him to manage. They're a good team. Like, they have talent. I picked them to win the NL East. There's talent all over the field. My issue is with Cohen. Is he going to be a fan or is he going to be the owner? Is he going to be like Jerry Jones? That's what I'm wondering with Cohen. You know, he's on Twitter tweeting about this and tweeting about that. I don't know. So I have questions with Cohen.
I think
at least he's willing to spend money. So that's good.
Yeah. When it comes to the day to day, I really do kind of get the impression that Alderson and Zach Scott are kind of running the ship.
I hope so.
I think they've got a lot of leash, but when the off season comes up and there's, if Cohen has to have a guy, I could kind of see him doing the owner override. Yes. Yeah. Before I get into my candidate, I will concede though that Washington, I think might be an easier fit because I think he would go along with the analytical stuff that Alderson seems to like versus my candidate. But I like Buck Showalter and he's of the old guy mold and he's going to go in there and that's going to be his clubhouse and they're going to shut.
That'd be interesting.
They're going to shut the bleep up and Buck's going to run the team. Now, will he cooperate with the analytics? I mean, maybe he's super open to it. I don't know. But he's a smart baseball guy. He did get in trouble in a wild card game by not bringing in Zach Britton. Kind of left that bullet in the chamber and it bit him because he wanted to bring him in with a lead. But as a Red Sox fan, I always thought he was a smart manager, especially when we had, I don't know how you felt about John Farrell, but I thought he was one of the worst.
I hated John Farrell.
Yeah. Oh,
I hated John Farrell.
I mean,
the only reason he stayed as long as he did is he had cancer and they felt bad.
That saved him. Yeah. And they still could have
really did.
And
I hate to say that. It sounds terrible. I sound like a horrible human being, but it's just the truth. You know, like it would have been a bad look. He just got diagnosed with cancer. You can't fire him now.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Red Sox had problems with optics leading up to that. The Lester thing was still fresh, and they botched a bunch of things, and
it got to be a mess under Farrell.
Yeah, and Bobby Valentine was an idiot as well, but I think Valentine, if he wasn't running his mouth about players, I think his in-game managing was fine, really. I thought Bobby Valentine was a smart in-game manager compared to Farrell. Farrell could not manage a bullpen to save his life.
The problem is the players all hated Valentine.
Yeah, so that's what I mean.
It just wasn't a popular move with the players.
Yeah.
And when they hired Valentine, it was partly I was excited, but I was under the impression, for me, that was either boom or bust. It was either going to go really, really good or really, really bad. And it went really, really bad. So
it was one of those super curious things. Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah.
I was intrigued by the Valentine hiring, and but it blew up. It blew up in the second week when he made those comments about Euclid, and there was just no saving him at that point. But
it was over after that.
From an in-game perspective, I thought Valentine was definitely smarter than Farrell. But
I agree.
Yeah. And Farrell, in a way, I mean, he lost the clubhouse as well. You know, by the end of it, he was clashing with David Price, the whole manager John thing, if you remember that.
I do remember that, yeah.
Yeah, so Farrell was terrible, but so seeing his dumbass moves every day and then watching a guy like Buck Showalter get so much more out of so much less of a team, I just had a lot of respect for him. Yeah. And he doesn't put up with any crap. I remember when the camera would hone in on him on the dugout, he kind of looks like a serial killer that just walked out of a random house after whacking everyone inside of it. You know, like, he's just so intense. Yeah. And it's funny.
I liked Showalter a lot. That'd be fun in New York. That'd be a blast with Showalter in New York City.
Even if it's just to finish out this year, I think they would have a good chance of winning.
I agree.
The team doesn't have a ton of toxic personalities, I wouldn't say. So I don't think it would be too tough of a transition, but. Yeah, and he's on MLB Network now. That's his new gig. They just bring him in occasionally, and he sounds like Billy Bob Thornton in a way.
He does.
He does. He could totally do voiceovers for him, but yeah. So it's just tough to tell where it's going to go. But getting back to Rojas, an interesting development happened. Apparently, there was a bit of a brouhaha between Francisco Lindor and Jeff McNeil. And details are sketchy as far as what may or may not have happened. But if you watch the replays of it, they're in the tunnel out of view. And you could see a couple of players. I know Mike Conforto was one of them. Jonathan Villar.
Yeah, Dom Smith. And Dom Smith as well.
Yeah, they kind of bolted into the tunnel area and kind of nonchalantly walked out as if almost nothing happened. So nothing serious, I'm sure, didn't happen. And they were both interviewed after the game, and neither one of them looked scuffed up. So it could have simply just been a heated verbal situation. But apparently the lie that they went with was Lindor thought he saw a New York City rat and McNeil thought it was a coon, but then said during the post game press conference, no, actually, I think it was a possum. And they were being good soldiers for the organization by putting on that show and not saying what they thought happened. But it looked like what really went down was there was a play on the field where there was a shift because the lefty was up and McNeil kind of interfered in a play that should have been Lindor's, and the out didn't happen at first because the throw was late, and maybe they were getting into it about that. But what were your thoughts?
I mean, I thought the whole thing was hilarious after the game. You heard Lindor. I thought it was funny. I think it's ridiculous that was the best they could come up with. It wasn't about a rat and a possum and a raccoon. Just stop, you know. But just come up with something better. Or what they should have did was, we got heated. It's a, you know, it's a, it's a team's game. We all get heated with each other. Teammates, that's what happened. Just own up to it. You know, you don't have to make a lie about that. It wasn't even a big deal. I just thought it was funny that Conforto and Gom Smith were standing there, and then all of a sudden they booked it down to the dugout. And then everyone's pausing to stir. Like, I thought someone like had a heart attack or something. Like, thought it was something serious. And after the game, it was a raccoon, it was a possum, it was a rat. I've never seen a New York rat before, he says. Oh my goodness. Like, again, I don't want to pick the Mets while they're down, but that's the Mets. Like, does that happen to any other team? Like, the Mets are just, it's just something about the Mets. I don't understand it. Again, I think it's hilarious because now they're making t-shirts about raccoons and rats now, and it's whatever. Lindor was, you know, you could tell Lindor wasn't bothered by it, but Jeff McNeil has that, I don't know, he didn't look like he was too thrilled with the press conference after that. You know, he played the good soldier, but he looked like he was still kind of steamed about it.
Yeah.
It's the Mets.
I mean,
that's all I got, it's the Mets.
Because Lindor, you know, like we were saying earlier, he's a very likable guy. He's got a very easygoing personality. So if you told me before that game started that two players were going to get into a verbal altercation, which two do you think it's going to be? I wouldn't have put Lindor in there.
I would have never said Lindor.
Yeah.
On that team. No.
He's
always happy. He never looks upset. He's always happy. He's always laughing. How could you get upset with Lindor?
And like, he's got his money, so that's not looming over his head, you know? So.
No.
Yeah. So it's just a little interesting. There was a similar situation with, this is going back, I don't know, 8 or 10 years. When Jake Peavy and AJ Pierzynski were in Chicago, apparently they got into it. And I can't remember if it was within view or not, but they were both asked about it after the game. But unlike Lindor and McNeil, Peavy and Pierzynski didn't have their story straight. So when they asked Pierzynski about it, Pierzynski said, well, we're both hunters and we were talking about these exotic hunts and we were disagreeing over whichever one was more challenging. And so that was Pierzynski's story. And then they go to Peavy after and Peavy goes, oh, we're college football fans. He goes, I'm an Alabama guy. He's a Florida State guy. We were arguing about college football. So
absurd.
Yeah. So they didn't have their story straight, but it was probably, they were probably upset with each other about how the game was going. Maybe the sequences were off and they just weren't in sync with how to approach certain batters and whatnot. And Pierzynski's got a long history for being a very difficult teammate. And I think he was voted,
I was just about to say that,
amongst the players, he was the most hated guy in the league 1 year. So, which is hilarious because he's a good broadcaster. I mean, he's worked for Fox and I think he's professional enough and likable on the broadcast, right. But apparently the players hate him. So,
I was going to say one other thing. If you go back and look at when Jeff McNeil's press conference, he looked lost and didn't know what to say. He was just going like, I feel like when Lindor said, he goes, oh yeah, it was a possum, or I was mad because he said it was a raccoon, it's just ridiculous. And you feel like the Mets PR team could have came up with something better too. Like, you know, all right, this is what happened. The raccoon rat story. I've never heard something that ridiculous before. I'll be honest. I don't think I've ever heard something so ridiculous. Like, who argues about a raccoon and a rat anyway? That's, I mean,
yeah,
I don't know. I think it's absurd.
And actually, and then Luis Rojas was interviewed and he was asked about it. And he said, well, yeah. I don't know what it was about. He goes, by the time I got down in there, they said, no, we're just playing baseball.
We're just playing baseball. Yeah.
And then they came out. So, but that doesn't look good on Rojas that, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, tomfoolery going on in his clubhouse and it just kind of makes the team look, you know, out of sorts. I will say this, though. They have won 4 straight after tonight. So maybe they'll go on that run. They're in second right now. I think they're 1 or 2 games back of the Philadelphia Phillies, who I would never trust with a division lead. I know Joe Girardi's there. I got immense respect for him. But they are the Phillies until proven otherwise. So we'll see what that goes. But go ahead.
Yeah, I'm still surprised at how the Braves are playing, too. I'm just waiting for them to click. I know Sandoval had that home run tonight and, you know, descended to extras. I don't know. The Braves are a weird team. I still think the Mets are the best team in the division. I picked the Mets to win the East before the season started. I'm not going to waver off that. I still think the Mets are going to win the division. It would just be a little bit easy. It would ease my mind if, you know, they would get their lies together, if they would stop acting like children at the end of games and stop being a dumpster fire that the Mets have been under the Wilpons, and start a new era under Cohen and look competent. That's all I just thought that's what they'd be. I'd be like, well, they're going to be a competent organization right now. And since Cohen has bought the team, it hasn't really been that way. I'm waiting for it to happen. It's got to happen at some point. But
yeah,
I don't understand what's going on with the Mets.
I mean, typically, I usually like the Mets a lot on paper, but it's just they just come unraveled every year. I mean, Mickey Callaway might have been one of the worst managers ever, you know, just hot-tempered. Yeah. And apparently there were some other shenanigans going on. But yeah, they just they're just a team where I'm just not going to trust them until, you know, they finally do roar into the month of October. You know what I mean?
Yes, I agree.
So I mean, in theory, I mean they should be pretty good. I mean, Stroman's pitching very well. DeGrom also. I guess he was scratched from a start, but I think he's okay. They're going to get Syndergaard back before long, and
yes,
so I don't see why they couldn't. And I'm a few years older than you. I was born in 1983, so I'm not old enough to be mad about 1986, and we have a common we have a common enemy, you know, within the Yankees. So
yeah,
so I don't have any ill will towards the Mets. If they get it together, more power to them. So I love walking around saying the Yankees are the second best team in New York. You know, it just rubs those guys the wrong way. But yeah, so
yeah, I have no animosity towards the Mets either. And I know it came across the last couple minutes that I don't like the Mets. I have no issues with the Mets. They don't affect me. But I just wish they would be competent. And at some point under Cohen, I feel like they will. But I guess it was going to take a little bit of time. And so hopefully they'll get it together.
Yeah. I have a hard time picking against Atlanta. I know. Things are pretty wonky. They lost their catcher, probably for the season, with a torn thumb ligament. But yeah, well, all right. I think we hit all the points this week. We went about double the time I planned, trying to keep it a little bit short of a show. But we'll rein that in over the coming weeks. But for the listening audience,
sorry about that.
Yeah, well, I'm a rambler myself, so. For the listening audience, we will be back. It's a 4-game set that began on a Friday, so that means a Monday night recording, and the show will be available late that night, early Tuesday morning for your commute, to discuss the Baltimore series, which has the Red Sox up 2-0. So all seems right with the world as far as that goes, but we'll be back, like I said, Monday night to cover it. Everyone have a good weekend. Take care.